The whole thing about innovation is that it's actually totally rooted in structure. And being able to develop a culture of innovation is all about having a system in place for innovation, which sounds counterintuitive, right? But the focus is around the core capabilities that you have, the core value creating activities, but those need to be integrated with the structure you create to contain them, right? So those core capabilities, the value creating activities, need to be put into a system that allows for that fluidity. So those two kind of forces working against each other, or more so with each other in the business, is what allows you to create that, to be able to shift on a dime but not lose focus. So there, you have to be clear about what can shift and what cannot shift. And this comes back to what we've talked about with our core motivations and the sort of the passion pillar.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Stephanie Hayes. She's a business transformation consultant focused on helping organizations build and improve their business processes, manage change, align service areas, build capabilities, and improve their operations. Stephanie is the founder and owner of multiple startups, and her passion for entrepreneurs runs deep. She believes that small business entrepreneurs are the drivers of business going forward, and that being independent leaves more room for creativity, innovation, and happiness. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. That's innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, click the blue Take a Peek Inside button and have a look. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and especially for you, my podcast audience. In our discussion today, Stephanie talked to me about the four pillars of passion and how to use them in designing the business of your dreams. We talked about the six core systems of any business and the importance of focus and not overcomplicating things. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Stephanie Hayes. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Vancouver. Actually, she's in Seattle, she was telling me, in Canada, Stephanie Hayes, who's a business consultant, a business transformation consultant focused on helping organizations build and improve their business processes and manage change and align service areas, build their capabilities, grow their business, and improve their operations. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Stephanie. It's a privilege to have you as a guest.
Thanks so much, Jürgen. It's a privilege to be here.
Terry Trespecia, who we had on episode 152 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you. So big hello to Terry.
Thanks so much, Terry. I appreciate the recommendation.
Now, Stephanie, you're the founder and owner of multiple startups, and all of them still going strong and still growing. And with your experience building and operating small businesses, you've developed a lot of insight and clarity on how business models operate, how you develop them, how the customer service segmentation and value proposition can be designed. So I'm really looking forward to exploring the idea of designing your business much deeper today. But before we start talking about all things business and strategy, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for asking. I think in a nutshell, I've I've been working in small businesses and startups basically from the word go, and got a little bit addicted to them right out of university when I was working in a startup in the university's innovation center. And I think what I loved so much about startups was the opportunity to get so much experience across the board with so many different pieces of business. And I think that sort of set the stage for my career going forward. And I stayed in small business, I stayed in startup, but always consulting to much larger organizations. And that kind of gave me the opportunity to see business from two very different perspectives, but also to see how many threads there are that are present and common, whether you're a small startup or whether you're a large public sector organization or for-profit business. And so throughout the last 23 years, I've had the opportunity to work in a consulting capacity in a number of consulting businesses, and eventually starting up my own, where we were selling services into large organizations, but still having to build the business ourselves. So those two separate perspectives were really, really interesting. Most of my career, I've been working in technology and technology consulting, business strategy in the technology space, and slowly progressed to the point where I was building my own businesses. I have a software startup, not a startup anymore. We've been in business for a number of years. But I really had an interest in building a product after spending a number of years in the consulting space. Worked as an entrepreneur mentor within the University of British Columbia in their E at UBC program, which really incubates startup ideas from the academic environment and takes them through to the seed fund. And then eventually, the people that I knew in the startup space and friends and family would come to me and say, look, you seem to know a lot about business. Will you help me with my business? And it really emerged into more of a coaching role. And so today, my primary role is as a coach, a business coach and strategist to small businesses and micro businesses who are just starting to get some traction or have gotten a little bit of traction and really need to mature and to grow. So that's the sweet spot right now. And that's where things have evolved. And I've really found that being in that place satisfies a lot about the way that I want to work and where my skills are most aligned, and also is high value to the clients that I'm working with.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting how things in a lot of businesses evolve in that way. But it's whilst it's an organic evolution, it is actually a journey of discovery, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. And I think that's the key piece of learning that I took out of all of this was that alignment is so important in the business that you're running, both in terms of who you are as a person and what your passions are, but also in terms of the organization as an entity.
All right. So what changes when someone works with you then? What changes for them?
I think the primary thing that changes with them that really causes them to have these aha moments are stepping right back to the business that they have designed and examining that from the perspective of alignment. So typically a business owner will start up a business because they identify a market opportunity. And when we're in business school or when you are taking courses or when you are learning about entrepreneurship and starting up a business, you're often told to start up from the perspective of the customer. And oftentimes, that's actually not the best place for someone to start. They may have built a product, and that product is really what they want to start with. And so we take, they have a certain skill or set of expertise that they really want to leverage. And if they start from the customer, they're going to go down this road of building a business that is not aligned with what they really want. So sometimes it is the customer that is really their core passion. They want to work with this very specific group of people, but oftentimes it's not. And my passion is around the way that I want to work. And I need to make sure that everything that I build in my business supports that and is true to that, or I'm going to have a business that I don't really love to run. And you know what happens when you don't have the passion for your business, you don't put the energy in and things just don't flow. So what we do is we strip right back to to the core motivation that that business owner has. And we look at their business model and we ensure that their business model is structured in such a way that it's achieving their desired motivations.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it is contrary to, as you said, the popular notion of identify your customer and identify their needs and then address those needs, which is fine as long as what you have to identify their needs is something that you actually are uniquely placed to add value to that particular customer, and also you're really passionate about it. So I think they're the disconnects that sometimes happen, aren't they? And you talked about alignment and you talked about going down the path where you're driven by what the customer needs and then finding out that you actually don't like doing that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the example that I like to give, because nobody can relate to it, is, you know, we get really clear on our vision and we get passionate about this vision, but we don't go a level deeper and really figure out what our business passion is. So, you know, if my vision was that every baby goat has pajamas, which, you know, nobody actually, you know, funny enough, I was doing a webinar and I used this example and there was a lady who put up her hand in the webinar. She says, I'm a goat farmer of all the things. But, you know, if that was your vision, what is the business that most people would think to build? They would probably think to make pajamas, manufacture pajamas for baby goats, right? That's obvious. But when we apply these cookie cutter business models, we are not thinking about ourselves as business owners. So what if I don't like sewing, or what if I don't like to knit, or what if my hands don't work so well, or what have you? I'm going to carry on with this business because I'm so committed to my vision, but I'm not going to be very happy with it. And I'm not going to really have the energy that I want to put into this business because it's just not aligned. So what if I was the delivery truck driver that delivered the pajamas? Or what if I was a lobbyist that lobbied to have legislation passed so every baby goat needs to wear a pajama? What if I was the farmer? There are so many different ways that I could still execute on that vision that are more aligned with who I am or what I want to do. So we don't think about that next layer of what this business could look like. And frankly, when I sit down with a business owner, I say, you can have whatever you want. They kind of look at me and they say, well, don't you mean what my customers want? I said, no, you got to start with what you want. And so I think that's the big shift. That's the big change for them. And you can see the energy change within minutes of finally figuring out what that business model needs to be so that they can get behind it and that it works for them.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good example, because there are so many ways that you can execute that vision, and having it consistent with your vision then is going to make it so much easier, because in business, as we all know, there are times when things get a little hard. We run up against hurdles that we have to work to overcome. We need to put energy into overcoming those hurdles. And if we don't have that energy and the passion that drives it, then it's going to be so much more difficult.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of business owners start, I mean, not everybody is born a business owner. And a lot of these guys start with a craft or a skill. I'm a woodworker and I want to build a business doing this thing I love to do. But they quickly run up against these limitations in terms of their understanding of business. And so they try to focus on the tactics. And what happens when you focus on the tactics is that you build this kind of Franken business. I figured out how to do accounting over here. And then over here, I learned something about marketing. And then over here, I learned, you know, some systems, and I kind of cobbled all these things together, and now I've got this Franken business that sort of moves forward, but, you know, is put together from all these different pieces and sources of information. And so when, you know, with the tactics feel like progress, and that's what every business owner wants to make, but when it starts to get hard and that initial first high of I'm doing a thing is over, that's when a lot of people are left scratching their head and going, why doesn't this work?
Mm. Yeah. And that typically happens in the first few years, where, you know, the statistics say that most small businesses fail within 7 years is the magical number, but I'm guessing that a lot of them fail earlier than that.
A lot earlier, yep.
Hmm. All right. So what are some of the first steps you'd recommend to somebody if they're looking at their business and saying, I really need to change something, I really need to get back to some fundamentals here and look at the design of the business itself and turn it into something that I really love?
Right. And so there's a framework that I've created called the Four Pillars of Passion. And to be honest, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek to begin with because, you know, I rail against the there's a lot of literature and there are a lot of sort of sparkly people out there telling business owners, just find your passion and you'll be good. Yeah. And it's no, actually, you know, this is a passion is not a hobby, right? And when you try to make a business out of your hobby, it typically fails miserably because the business fails and then you hate your hobby, right? So going that next level deeper, there are four pillars of passion in business. And really, this is what it boils down to. I'm either passionate about the particular customer or niche that I am trying to serve, or I'm very passionate about a particular product or service offering that I've created that I've dreamed up and this is the thing that I want to deliver, or I'm passionate about a particular skill set that I have that I, you know, I'm a connector or I am a human rights lawyer or something like that. And I know that, that's what I want to be doing. Or I'm passionate about the way that I work. So one of these four pillars is going to be your pillar. When you know what your pillar is, you now have the basis for a foundation of decision-making for the rest of your business model. And the way that you figure out what that is you run a test. We always want to optimize a business around each of these four pillars, and so they all need to be as good as they can be. But to figure out which one is yours and which one needs to be true for everything that you do, you start with, let's say you filled them all out and you start with your customer. You say, if I could do all the other three pillars optimally, but I had to change something about this one pillar, would I still want to do the work? So for example, there was a client I was working with and she was having a really hard time deciding what her business was going to be. She tried one hobby, then the other hobby. And she just didn't find anything she was super excited about. And so we started talking and she was mentioning these people that she loved working with. And I thought, well, goodness, her pillar really is the customer and she would follow that more traditional business design model. She wanted to work with these ultra-assertive spiritual people and they really fed her. And that was something. And so all the things we were trying to figure out, the what, you know, the what she was doing was really not that important to her. It was more important that she served this particular demographic, which then allowed us to say, okay, that has to be true in everything else that we're doing. So what could you do to serve them? What do they need? And you know, then you can follow your traditional business design model. But I've also had customers who have come to me and said, well, I created this really cool framework for, or I created this really cool product, right? And it's a pair of, active wear leggings that have met a whole bunch of really cool things that other retail manufacturers haven't been able to create. So that was her core pillar. And so we worked backwards from there and we said, okay, who would want this and who is it for? My pillar is the way that I want to work. I know that I don't like projects and deliverables and deadlines. I'm just so much more in my flow when I am analyzing and I'm strategic and I'm able to speak and talk on the fly. And so I know that that's true because I would sacrifice all the other things being perfect in order for that to remain true. And now I have this beacon and I have this guidance and every decision I make in my business is going to ensure that it's aligned with that particular passion. So that is the very first step for us to take when we really want to make sure that our business is aligned. When that's in place, now we can start looking at the next layer of the business, which is your goals and your values and, you know, the things that you want to remain true in your business. And from there, we can then ensure that we are serving customers and we have defined customers that ensure alignment with the rest of those pieces of our business. So we're going sort of from the heart out. And the offers that we create need to also support the passions that we have in our business and all four of those pillars. So we kind of work from the core out. Now, if you can work through that model and make sure it's all aligned and get that right, you've got this really strong core for your business. And then all of the other tactical stuff can kind of fall into place. And there's sort of six pillars to business. One of them is this business model design. And then there's your offers and your pricing. And then there's your financial plan and your marketing and your selling and your systems and your processes. And finally, the way that you work and your work scheduling. So all of these things need to be in alignment and in lockstep with each other, but you have to start at that core.
That's a really comprehensive line of sort of working out. I'm fascinated. You gave a couple of examples there where you described speaking with clients and discovering what their kind of core passion, what their core pillar of passion is. So how do you go about that? Is that just a conversation and a bunch of questions to really understand what motivates them and what their values are and what where they get their energy from?
It's not, you know, it's not really that complicated. I think where it gets complicated is that we resist. We want to be all things to all people, right? And I think a lot of business owners, you know, come from this place of fear and scarcity, and so they don't want to double down on something for fear. And you see this a lot in marketing and selling, for fear of losing a potential part of their market. So that is more the challenge, is getting people to commit to a pillar. It doesn't mean that we ignore the rest of your pillars. It just means we know which one has to be pivotal first, and then we build out from there. So we want to make an optimized business. We want to make a business that is entirely designed for exactly what you want. But getting them to step through that process, it's pretty simple. It's just the mindset and the thinking around commitment is a place that a lot of business owners get caught up. They do it all the time. They say, well, if I'm not all things to all people, I'm going to miss out on opportunities. And really the opposite is true, that if you are trying to be all things to all people, your ideal customers aren't going to see themselves in you. They're not going to see themselves in your services or your offers or your products. They're going to walk away because they don't understand, right? It's the same with your pricing. If your pricing is out of alignment with the brand you're trying to create, your ideal customers aren't going to find you. And that goes both ways. So if my brand is all about trying to serve more experienced entrepreneurs and higher level entrepreneurs, yet I'm pricing at a much lower pricing rate than they would consider that service to be worth, they're going to look at my prices and they're going to think, what's wrong with that? Maybe I shouldn't go for it, right? Rather than, oh, what a deal. I can get her for cheap, right? So we put so much emotion into things like pricing, into things like, you know, our business model. Well, really, there are some pretty clear answers living in the facts that we can pull out and start committing to. And that's going to make everything flow a lot nicer.
Yeah, well, that is such a good point. The fear of missing out, I think, is something that we all suffer as entrepreneurs, and we kind of think, yes, I can do that and take on more or spread further afield outside of our core competencies or outside of our core customer niche or whatever it might be. And for me, every time I've really focused more narrowly in terms of the whole business approach or project or so on, it's actually had the totally opposite effect. In fact, the better I focus, the more the results come in, or the, you know, the growth occurs. So it's counterintuitive, and yet so many people struggle to actually do it. And I've got to say, you know, every now and then I fall into the trap of, oh, hang on a minute, I'm losing focus here.
Yep. And I learned that lesson really, really well last year when I started experimenting with program design and, you know, it's just putting things out there. I'm an innovator, so I like to just throw things out into the wind and see what happens and adjust quickly. But I very, very quickly realized that the way that I was positioning and selling a certain service was attracting entirely the wrong people. And they would complain about a $25 a month price tag, whereas the same people would pay $3,000 for a program that wasn't that much more in terms of service delivery, but the way it was positioned was so much different. So, you know, we get into these sort of ruts of trying to be all things to all people when really our core people just want us to be the thing we are to them, right? And that's hard to do when you're in a bit of a scarcity mentality, or you're freaking out about, you know, the money that's not coming in. And I absolutely get it. But casting your net wider does not always result in more customers.
Yeah, it does. It does require a bit of a leap of faith, like you said, particularly at the start when you do need the revenue coming in to sustain your lifestyle mm-hmm. or to pay the bills. But as you say, the focus will actually deliver the results quicker.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned doing some experiments there and that you're an innovator at heart. So there's a bit of a disconnect there, I suppose, around innovation and doing those experiments and that focus. So how do you reconcile that?
To me, they're quite related. I think having a culture of innovation within, whether you're a one-person shop or whether you're a small business or a much larger organization, building that commitment to innovation and that process and that practice around innovation is absolutely critical to not getting stuck. And if you find things aren't working right away, then you need to be able to shift. And this doesn't mean, you know, shift so radically that you are confusing your customers and yourself. But this is where, you know, the whole academic background to innovation, this is what my postgraduate work was all around innovation management. So I'm going to nerd out here a little bit, but you know, the whole thing about innovation is that it's actually totally rooted in structure. And being able to develop a culture of innovation is all about having a system in place for innovation, which sounds counterintuitive, right? But the focus is around the core capabilities that you have, the core value creating activities, but those need to be integrated with the structure you create to contain them, right? So those core capabilities, the value creating activities, need to be put into a system that allows for that fluidity. So those two kind of forces working against each other, or more so with each other in the business, is what allows you to create that, to be able to shift on a dime but not lose focus. So there, you have to be clear about what can shift and what cannot shift. And this comes back to what we've talked about with our core motivations and the sort of the passion pillar. I know this one pillar here can't shift. So what do I need to shift around it in order to get to that place that's just right? And that requires you to be good with experimentation. It requires you to be clear around the data that you're receiving back, and to be curious and to notice. We launched a program in the fall that absolutely flopped because we just started without knowing anything. We knew that we were going into it to launch and learn, and that we were ready to fail fast if that wasn't going to be a thing, and it wasn't. And so then we turned around and I launched a new program right away, doing things differently and with the information that I'd learned, and it failed right away. So, like, you know, this is a constant. We are never going to be in a place as business owners, as entrepreneurs, where everything just sits in homeostasis. If you are, you are in a declining business that is on its way out, right? So if you are not okay with change and with fluidity and this sort of dynamic environment, you're probably not cut out to be an entrepreneur, right? This stuff is just constant change, and it is constant learning, and you should build the systems into your business to be able to capture and pivot with the data that comes in from your customers, from your delivery, from every different place in your business that you can capture data. And that's what I've tried to do in the foundation that I've built for business owners, is to be able to give them the tools where they can always be looking at data about their business from qualitative as well as quantitative sources.
Yeah, there's so much I love about that. So I like you opened up with innovation is totally rooted in structure and having a process for innovation. I remember back in the corporate world, back in the early days when I was on a small project team in a large corporation, and we came up with a process for research and development of new products, and all the research people threw up their hands and said, "This, you can't
structure this in a process. This is creativity. We need to have the freedom to think and create and come up with the ideas. And we had all sorts of issues at the beginning to convince them that there's actually a structure to the ideas and there's actually a process that they go through developing ideas. And even though they might not be consciously aware of the process, there was a process. And if we could harness that and then streamline it and make it work efficiently and particularly do what you went on to say later on, in other words, test things out very quickly and gather data and information to see what might work and what might not work, then we could be much more efficient in launching new products.
And
we actually succeeded in getting that through, but that was a huge learning for me at the time. In that, to me, it was intuitive that everything is actually a process that we do, even though, you know, there's lots of things we do completely unconsciously. They just happen, like we breathe, but there is a process to breathing. Our heart beats, but there's a process to that. And if you understand the process, then you can actually influence those things a little bit.
Absolutely. You're speaking my language. I'm loving this. But, you know, there's a thing, actually, Terry and I were talking about this the other day, but, you know, one of the foundations that I stand on is that structure actually equals freedom, right? It actually gives you the freedom and the creativity. And I work with a lot of creative entrepreneurs who are, you know, not the flamboyant, not the extroverted. They really value their creative process. And to them, it's interesting that they even come to work with me, because everything that I offer is around a lot of structure, but they know that that's missing and they still resist it because they think that's going to limit their creativity and what have you. But what they find is that finding the right amount of structure and the right places to have structure actually gives them tons of freedom in their work scheduling and they have made huge shifts from going like overwhelmed and, you know, selling transactionally to these really interesting strategic shifts and to feeling, getting their life back, right? So all of these problems are solvable and structure is actually your friend and gives you the space to have that kind of creativity. So, that, you know, I'm a huge fan of systems actually being the foundation behind creation.
Yeah, I can hear that and I can see that in all the material that you've put out there. Now, you mentioned earlier about the six pillars for business and you talked about what they were, and I'd like to explore that a little bit more. So could you just list those for us again and then talk a little bit about the systems that underpin those pillars? Because as you mentioned, you know, you're a huge fan of systems, and I think within those pillars to the business, there's a lot of systems that, as you say, can actually give you freedom within the business. And a lot of people, I find, resist putting those or documenting those systems in place. They have systems because, like I said, everything actually is a process, but it's not documented. And so if they hand off an activity to somebody else, it doesn't get done in the same way, and then things fall off the rails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, for these systems also scale. You know, you're familiar with the corporate environment where I've spent a lot of time and implementing very large systems and my background is in integration, so application and data integration. So we've seen some fairly interesting projects happen where we're trying to flow information across a business. Look at a bank, for example, and they've got 12 different sort of system categories, and then all of those pieces have a hub that has to have data flowing amongst them. Very, very difficult project. But when you boil that down to a small or a micro business, it becomes a little bit easier from a scope perspective to create some harmony within all of those systems. But the six pillars that I've built systems around are the business model design, first of all. That's where we start. Offers and pricing, and so whether that's products or that's service design, we dig into what you're actually doing for your customers. And, you know, that varies quite significantly from one business owner to another, but that's where we really get the creativity. That's where we can take all the pieces of a business owner's vision and put them together so they're actually delivering something that's in harmony with the way that they want to work and what their customers need and want and the things that are going to give them freedom in their lives. The third pillar is around the money, which nobody wants to talk about, but is probably the key the key liberator for most of these guys. You know, they don't want to dig into their money. It's scary and it's foreign to them. And people resist things that are fearful to, that they're fearful of, right? And, or that are unknown to them.
Yeah.
So what we try to do from a financial perspective is we do some planning, not around dollars, but around the context of the work that they're doing. So if you are selling a service, then we look at your financial plan in the context of the services that you're selling. So when I'm running a business, I don't sit and think about, I have to make $5,000 this month. I think about, I need 5 clients, or I need to sell, you know, 5 spots in a group program, or I need to sell, you know, 1 unit of the software product that I have. So putting the financial plan into the context of the actual work that the business is doing is critically important. If I have a business owner that says, oh, I want to make $100,000 this year, or $200,000 or $500,000 or whatever it might be, the chances of them actually achieving that goal are very slim. If we start to break it down and we put it in the context of how many of a thing they're trying to sell, that changes everything. And then, the tool that I've built is very easy for that. We don't spend time entering in dollar amounts. We spend all our time on the sales plan, which is the contextualized unit-based plan of action for them. And it's all connected so that it translates into money. So this is just one of 3 sort of legs of the stool that we eventually come back to. So the financial plan is the place that they start out hating, end up loving. And then we move on to marketing. And marketing is just about relationships, and it's about becoming known. So when we break it down into both content that we're producing and visibility, every marketing activity fits into one of those 2. So I'm not a fan of actually creating a marketing plan, so to speak. What I do is I give them repositories with which to plan the activities they're doing and to prompt them to create this sort of mix. But the traditional business plan, the traditional marketing plan is a huge waste of time for a lot of these business owners. It is an academic exercise that really produces very little value for them. And all of the focus is on the words I'm writing. Whereas if I just give them a data repository in which to capture and organize the marketing activities that they're taking, then they can pull from those and they can create their own sort of version of how they're going to create their brand and how they're going to support their brand and how they're going to go out and start building the relationships they need to build, because all of these pillars sort of need to be kept going at the same time. The 5th pillar is around systems and processes, which I'm sure you won't be surprised by, but these are all in a certain order for a certain reason, right? They all build upon the last pillar. So when we get to systems and processes, a lot of people, business owners, hate technology. They say, oh, I don't like technology. Oh, it's a pain in the ass. You know? But really what they're saying is, I haven't yet learned how it adds value to my business. And coming out of the technology space, I can tell you that you never put in a system without a business justification, right? Mm. So if we are looking at systems just because of FOMO, fear of missing out, or because they think it's going to be a band-aid solution to getting more business or clients or what have you, that's going to be a failed implementation, and they are not aligned with the value and the benefit of putting that system in place. So what we do is we look at their processes. There's 9 core processes every business has. And some depending on the business, will have other ones. But we look at those processes, and we figure out, again, alignment with the business, which of these are core to this business, which have to be absolutely bulletproof in order to be able to sustain the brand, and which are not that important. And as we go through the processes and we map them out, we can figure out where this business owner actually needs a system in place. And for some of them, they think they need a CRM, for example, and they don't really. They don't at all. It's not going to add any value to their process. However, they really need to get good at onboarding new customers. And so we'll focus there and we'll put some systems in place. Or where do they have this time suck or this energy suck? So going through and taking the perspective of the processes first is where we get to our system strategy. And then finally, we do work scheduling. And that is, for solo entrepreneurs, that's a really, really huge thing, because they don't know where their time is going. Now, that can be leveraged to add in teams, but this comes back to this whole feast and famine issue. these guys are often in a place where they're in this sort of like deliver. I've got lots and lots of clients and oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed and deliver, but they're not doing anything to drive the rest of the business. And so then they come up for air and all of a sudden they're at this crazy phase of like, oh my gosh, I have to go hustle for customers. And it goes back and forth and back and forth, right?
Yeah, so you get the yo-yo effect. Yeah.
Right. Mm. And so when they come from a place, we start their work scheduling around what they really want and what their lifestyle needs to allow them. So if they want to work only 20 hours per week, then we can say, okay, what does that look like? And let's make sure you're allocating those hours across all the different things you need to do in your business. And that results in this capacity plan. Now this becomes a huge truth-telling exercise, because if they're telling me I want to work 20 hours a week, then we can start looking at the other tools that we've created, and you can say, okay, does that allow you to deliver on the work that you have put into your financial plan, to your sales plan? And also, if it doesn't, then do we need to look at your pricing? So these three legs of the stool allow us to create this perfect, like, harmonized business model. So if I know that I don't have enough time to reach this financial goal, then I need to play with my pricing. If I know that my pricing has to stay, then maybe I have to back off my financial goal. But it's a huge reality check. But now we have all the data to tell us whether this business is actually going to work or not.
Hmm.
So the six pillars.
Yeah, that's a very comprehensive structure, and I really like that. There's so much really good stuff there. I understand what you're saying about the money, and I often suffer that myself. I really like how you put it in terms of, okay, there's five customers that I need to try to get on board, or I need to sell five new products. But turn it into a concrete sales plan rather than fret over the numbers itself. Mm-hmm. And the numbers come out of that. I also particularly like the work scheduling stuff, because often we kind of set ourselves up for doing a 60 or 70 hour day, and what we really want is to only work half of the day, so 60 or 70 hours a week, 20 hours a week, as you know, the contradiction from what we want to do and what the plan actually results in. So, yeah, really great advice. I could go on talking for hours with you, Stephanie. There's so much stuff there to unpack, but I'm conscious of the time. We've sort of gone well over half an hour already. So I think it's time to get on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's primarily designed to help our audience who are innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So some really short tips that hopefully will give some insights to inspire the audience to go and do something awesome today. So question one is, what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Okay, that's a good one. I think that we need to balance out destruction and creation. So we never want to, we don't seem to want to kill our darlings, but we need to build failure into our core processes and sort of break down that fear that prevents you from being curious.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, I'm certainly one that is guilty of hanging on to my little babies, even though that it was time to let go of them or throw them over the cliff because they weren't working. So, yeah, great advice. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I would say real-time product development. So whether it's in my coaching practice or whether it's in the software business, we developed our products in real time while working with customers. And that has been absolutely invaluable to fast tracking the whole product development life cycle and ensuring that what we're focusing on development around is validated.
So that means working with customers and getting them involved very early in the development phase.
Absolutely.
Hmm. All right. Do you have a resource that you use most often?
Oh my goodness. So if we're talking about just systems, I would say my favorite system right now, technology-wise, is Airtable. And that is what I've built a lot of my solutions on for my coaching practice. But I would also say that one of the frameworks I've leveraged throughout the years around innovation is Dorothy Leonard's Wellsprings of Knowledge. And in that book, she sort of creates that framework for building structure around innovation.
Mm. Yeah. All right. We'll link to those. Airtable's fabulous. It's a great tool. But again, we talked earlier about not jumping on tools simply for the sake of doing it. So we will link. We will link to that. But if it's not part of your business strategy, just let that one slide. And we'll link to Dorothy's book as well. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
I would say that that is a focus on goals and motivation. So since we're dealing with people, we always want to bring back the work that we're doing to motivators, both for the people, but also for the project. And if we, I think a lot of times projects get off track because there's bright, shiny objects or there is some distraction, right? So keeping things focused and on track is all about ensuring why you're doing it. And then also being able to appeal to the motivating factors for a particular individual, because we all have these different tendencies.
Yeah, great advice. So the motivation thing is really important, and understanding what actually motivates the client in core ways is very good as well. So I'm certainly guilty of doing distraction really well. I'm an expert in that.
I think we all are at times.
I have to look at myself and say, hang on a minute, what's important here? All right, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think you need to ask the questions that no one else is brave enough to ask.
I like that. Can you give us an example?
Sure. So in the software world, the product that we created, we asked a lot of questions that may have seemed dumb, you know, to our clients. And by asking those, we got to the heart of what we built into our system to make it different. And that addressed problems that no one else was willing to try and address because they felt sort of silly asking the questions. So, differentiating ourselves has been about knowing the answers to those questions no one else wants to ask.
Yeah, that's great advice. And often we make assumptions, don't we?
We do.
When we face those questions, we make assumptions and say, oh, well, we don't need to ask that. That makes us seem silly. And so we assume. And then if we don't get the assumption right, then it's not delivering and it's not differentiated.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. All right. Now, what's the future for you and your business then?
Oh, you know, things have been going like gangbusters. We just launched a new program, new group program this week, actually. But this year I have a vision to actually creating an entrepreneurship program for growing businesses. So most of my coaching work is focused on solo entrepreneurs or small businesses, but I find that there are businesses that are growing that are losing sight of their innovative capabilities. So I want to take all of the work that I've done with small businesses and on solo entrepreneurs and turn that into a program that can help growing businesses retain their innovative characteristics.
Hmm. Okay. We look forward to seeing that come to fruition.
Mm-hmm, well, me too.
Thanks, Stephanie. This has been really great. Where can people reach out to you and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Oh, absolutely. My website is stephaniehayes.biz, so stephaniehayes.biz/InnovaBiz, and I will have a little free offer up there for a one-on-one strategy call for your listeners.
That's great. Thank you. We'll have links to that in the show notes so that people can just click through. All right. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner then who wants to be a leader in innovation?
I would say don't be afraid to go out there and make a mess or to be wrong, right? Because the sooner that you go out there and you try, the sooner you're going to know what direction you need to go in. So this is an environment of constant change and constant learning. And if you're not willing to go out there and be messy to begin with, it's going to be hard for people to find you relatable and you'll have difficulty with your positioning. So I think just being comfortable with that is a huge step forward for a lot of business owners.
Great advice. And I think in your about page or somewhere I read about you, you used the sentence, "I failed, but I won."
Oh, absolutely.
That encapsulates that, right?
Yes.
All right. Finally, then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
I would love to see you interview Alexander Osterwalder. He's from Strategizer, which is the company that sort of took the business model canvas and really kind of blew it up for corporations. Not only because he's incredibly smart and he's done some really interesting stuff, but he's also from St. Gallen in Switzerland, which is where my family is from. And he seems like a very intelligent and innovative individual.
Oh, right. So you're from St. Gallen in Switzerland. I didn't know that.
My family is, yes.
Your family. Okay. So do you know Alexander? Can you get us an introduction?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if I could, but I'd certainly like to try.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can reach out to Alexander and get him on the podcast. Thanks for that suggestion. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today. You've been really generous with the information and I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot as well. I've got a whole page of notes here. So I'm looking forward to sharing this episode with my audience. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Thanks so much, Jürgen. I appreciate you having me on.
I hope you enjoyed that fascinating and insightful conversation with Stephanie and, like me, found a lot of value in the information she shared. There are so many valuable tips and lessons in the interview. Some of the highlights for me were her four pillars of passion and building alignment with your core business vision. Marketing is about relationships and becoming known, so don't overcomplicate it. And then innovation is totally rooted in structure. I'd love to know what you took away from Stephanie's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Stephanie Hayes. That is StephanieHayes. Or lowercase, or one word, innovabiz.co/Stephanie Hayes. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Stephanie there, as well as links to her website, her free consultation offer, and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation. Stephanie suggested we interview Alexander Osterwalder, co-founder of Strategizer and inventor of the business model Canvas, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Alexander, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the podcast, courtesy of Stephanie Hayes. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.